what's amazing to me is that somehow America's oldest president is also its biggest baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 274. I want to thank every one of you so much for being here. So the things that are happening in the news right now, I do not want to talk about. I'm sorry, I don't. Just there's a bunch of stuff going on with the Russia investigation. There's a bunch of stuff going on with Mueller. Trump's kids are probably going to go to prison. Yeah, all of that is sexy talk, and that would be fun to talk about. But I want to go in a different direction right now because I see something happening economically that I'm not certain that people are paying attention to, and I think you need to. See, the 2008-2009 crash just seemingly came out of nowhere, but what we learned about a year or two after the crash really hit home, which would be late summer of 2009, was that the late summer 2008 was that the crash had actually begun the 8 months previous. So in December of 2007 is when those markers started to show. One of the things that I have an amateur interest in, I do not hold a degree in, but I definitely have an amateur interest, is economics. And I watch the economic numbers like crazy. I was having a conversation with some old bandmates of mine this week. I made a trip back home and I got to visit with some of them. And, you know, some of them have moved on to other bands. And then, of course, I'm doing stuff too. I'm DJing and I'm, you know, about to play drums with somebody. And they were talking with me and I said, you know, I'm pretty happy on my own. I do the podcast on my own. I do the DJ thing on my own. And I said, I'm about to start playing with some guys. I'm about to join a band, but man, I hate depending on other people. So I've really enjoyed being alone. And that took them back a little bit. And I said, yeah, I get tired of depending on other people. So I just do everything on my own. There's a joy and there's a comfort in relying on other people for anything. And we should be able to rely on other people. There are two competing visions for America. There is one of rugged individualism, as they like to call it. And then there's another one that they like to label as socialism, which is clearly not what it is. In the current environment, I have learned to simply just depend on myself for everything. But man, I would sure love to see a world where we could lean on one another. Failing at that, I take absolutely everything into my own hands. The news should be laying some of this stuff out right now. If their job is to inform and not to entertain, which sometimes it seems like there's a fine line between the two. If their job is to inform, that's where they're falling down on the job. So many news outlets, CBS, NBC, CNN, they get a bunch of freaking liberals. Oh my God, the liberal media. That's what conservatives will say because they're not out there pushing all of the right-wing talking points. If you're not pushing right-wing talking points, then you're clearly on the left. If you're mentioning things that are actually happening, well, then for piss sake, you're clearly a liberal. And what are you doing? You're not worth being listened to. But economics isn't sexy. It's very, very boring. It's very, very dry. But it also affects every one of us. So the Fed has been raising rates recently. You may or may not have noticed. And with that, housing starts have slowed. Also, the people buying new homes has slowed. People buying existing homes has slowed. Now, we don't have the exact same situation that we had back in the late 2000s, although we could. See, we've been, since Trump came into office, and people like to say, the Trump economy, it's doing so good. Well, we're effectively on the same trajectory that we have been on since about 2009, 2010. We're on the same trajectory. But see, that trajectory was supposed to slow down in about 2015, 2016, unfortunately, right on time for the presidential election. And then it didn't. It just sort of kept going. And then we got to get on this sugar high. The Republicans came in and they passed this massive tax cut, not for you and me, but for the billionaires. And the billionaires got their massive tax cut. And what happens with a good sugar high? And that's all it was, right? They called it the TCJA, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. They said that the tax cuts and jobs, you're going to have so many jobs, it's going to make you sick. Yeah, that'll be the day. Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. The tax cuts were there, but of course the jobs never followed. And yes, there was a boost to the economy. And it helped stave off that economic slowdown that needed to happen. See, we've got this boom and bust cycle in America. There's an article over on I think NPR's website, and it mentions that Australia hasn't had a recession or even any sort of an economic slowdown for about 30 years. That's pretty significant. But we are in these boom and bust cycles that Dr. Ravi Batra, a renowned economist, says happen about every 8 to 10 years. So we got the economy back on track, or started getting it back on track about 2009, 2010. So about 2016, 17, and 18. Here we are. And we're starting to see the economic slowdown. Now, if we had a more equal economy, that's not the way it would be. We wouldn't have to deal with these boom and bust cycles every eight to 10 years. But that's not what we have. Gun policy is what it is because of conservative politicians. And now your kids have to be afraid to go to school and get killed. Foreign policy is what it is, largely because of conservatives. Unending wars keep us bogged down, they keep us poor, they keep our children overseas, and it keeps military contractors very, very rich. Our medical system is what it is, because of conservative policy. We have to put it into private hands. We can't have it in the public's hands, we got to put it in private hands, because only they know how to handle it. We can't handle it, we're just people. But the billionaires, those guys are supermen. They can handle it. Everything that we have that we absolutely effing hate. Hate what it is. Hate the way it's run. Hate the way it's carried out. Hate the place that it plays in our lives. Every one of these brought to us by conservative politicians. When Ronald Reagan came into office, the big idea for him was, first of all, to bust the unions. You want to really pinpoint when immigration broke. It would be when Ronald Reagan became president and he busted the unions. The unions backed him in the 1980 election. And then he immediately came in and PATCO fired 11,000 unionized tower workers. And he stopped prosecuting employers who bring cheap labor across the border. And all of that was in an effort to bust unions, and it worked. See, whether you belong to a union or not, your raises, the floor for wages is set by unions. So he does that. Then here come the monster tax cuts, and they go, hey, wait a minute, Melvin. Both Democrats and Republicans both voted for those tax cuts. And that's true. Oh, that's absolutely true. Oh, I will cop to that all day. That is true. But we see the effect of it now, and we don't like it anymore. We no longer think that it's a good idea. We have finally woken up from this. But Republicans, despite all of the evidence, and they are never, ever swayed by evidence, despite all of the evidence, still push this idea that if we just pay people less, you know, give all the money to the super duper rich people, everything is just going to get better. All that money is going to be handed down. Article here from USA Today. The headline reads, a whopping 62% of jobs don't support middle class life after accounting for the cost of living. They talked to one woman, we'll call her Esler, who lives in Brooklyn, New York. Yeah, Brooklyn is expensive. And she has a good job as a public relations specialist that pays more than $50,000 a year. Man, I remember hearing $50,000 a year. I'm going to buy a house with cash. I'm going to buy a car with cash. $50,000 a year isn't cutting it, especially since she lives in New York, because she pays $1,440 a month for rent in her studio apartment. She never takes vacations and dines out once a month and then scrapes together dinner leftovers for lunch the next day. Works full time. Is not guaranteed health care. Is not guaranteed retirement. Quoting here, I'm frustrated with the fact that I'm not going to be able to save anything because my rent is so high. She says she's 30-ish. We don't ask a lady their age. I don't even know if I can afford to have children, she says. Despite unemployment that has reached a 50-year low of 3.7%, most jobs across the U.S. don't support a middle class or better lifestyle, leaving many Americans struggling. This according to a new study. So I hear it all the time from conservatives. My God, have you noticed the Trump economy? See, we've had a string of presidents over the last number of years that it would be nice to say that Republicans did one thing one way and Democrats came in and did the exact opposite. Democrats did not, because see, I think everybody believed in this idea. You know what? It's never been proven, but it's going to work this time. Let's just crazy cut taxes, give all the money to the billionaires. It didn't work before, but it's going to work this time. And we've got the lowest unemployment probably ever, 3.7%. Everywhere I go, there are signs, now hiring, now hiring, now hiring. And they go, look at that. Dang-gum, Trump economy's doing so freaking good. And so I go in and I ask the boss. And I'm cocky. I'm a prick. I'll admit it. Hey, I saw that you're hiring. I've got 2 decades of experience doing this kind of work. The average rent for an apartment in this area, for an apartment, sir, I would like to live in a house because I have children. Fine. The average rent for a house is $2,400 a month. You stretch that out over a year, you're paying, if you make $50,000 a year, you're paying half. Half of what you make goes to rent. Not to buy, to rent. Well, I've got a lot of years of experience. I've got the specialized licenses that it takes to do this job. How much does this job pay? This job starts at $15 an hour. $15 an hour. Now, $15 an hour, we want to make that the federal floor for wages. That's the whole fight for 15 thing. See, and there are some states where that works, but there are a lot of states where that's not even going to move the needle, huh? So rent is $2,400 a month. It's going to cost me $30,000 for rent. You want to pay me $30,000, but you know what? That's cool because I don't need internet. I definitely don't need electricity. I'm certainly not going to need food. Toilet paper is purely a luxury anyway. How about you pay me what it costs me to live in this area? Now, I'm not walking into McDonald's. Not that those people should get effed over. But I'm walking into somewhere where I've got the experience. I've got the specialized licenses, you know, and it's a driving job. I'm accident free. I'd be an absolute asset to your company. Well, maybe if, you know, I could talk to the manager and maybe we could get it up to $15.50 or maybe $16. You know, if you work here for a year, it goes, it may or may not go up to, $17. It may or may not go, you know what? I can't afford to get an apartment at that rate. I cannot afford to get a house, because when I have children, at that rate. Well, aren't you married? Yeah, I am married. And my wife brings in an income. But if your business plan includes me either collecting public benefits or depending on a spouse, then your business plan is flawed and your business probably should not exist. But that's what we have. See, I've got a couple of jobs. And the reason for that is because of our crappy, the way we deliver healthcare. It's crappy. I can't just buy it from a not-for-profit system. I have to buy it from a for-profit system, and I can't afford that. It would eat about half of what I make at my business, the business that I own. And so I have another job, and this is effing ridiculous, just for the healthcare. I'm ranting today, and I make no apologies about that, but there's no way that I'm the only person that is sick of this system. So if my numbers are correct, GM got a $175 million windfall. $175 million that just sort of showed up out of nowhere when the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act got passed. Paul Ryan, President Trump, what did they say? That they even called it the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So this is like the Clean Air Act. What does the Clean Air Act do? It makes the air dirtier. The Clean Water Act. What does the Clean Water Act do? Makes the water dirtier. Water, air, dirty, even though it says it's going to clean them up in the bill. So what happens with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act? I know you've heard about this, but I'd like to point it out again. Less than 12 months after seeing its corporate tax rate slashed by Congress, General Motors announced it will lay off 14,000 workers. 14,000 workers. So Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, now retired, he'll have a million dollar a year job next year because he got this passed. Him and everyone else that signed on to this got a gang of money for it. And Kevin Brady, the Republican from Texas, they were the two chief architects of this bill. And not only did this bill not create any jobs, but one employer, think about that, one employer that got a $175 million check, because just like Lucy with the football, we were told and we believed again that she wasn't going to pull the ball away. We were told that if we gave them this money, they would invest in their factories and they would hire more workers. And instead, what they did was they bought back their own stock, thereby raising the price of the stock and thereby making them more money. And they gave it to their shareholders. That's where all the money went. And in an effort to save even more money, they've decided that they're going to close 5 plants and strip 14,000 full-time workers. 14,000 is a lot. See, some of these towns, this is all they have. You know, they don't have tons and tons of different industries. I was reading about one town, and in one town, they said there were more people that work in that factory than live in the town where that factory resides. I know it doesn't make sense, but people come from the surrounding areas to work there. They drive a long way into work. But the town that it's in, there's more people that work there than are. And so that town is effectively just going to dry up and blow away. And it's not just these 14,000 people that are going to lose their jobs. It's going to be all of the support workers, because see, those workers rent or buy their homes. They also have cars that need gasoline and maintenance. They also buy food and go out for dinner, you know, to celebrate. You know, they also buy toys and toiletries and towels and blue jeans, all of that. So all of those support positions are also going to heavily suffer too, because jobs tend to have a multiplier effect. This job supports this job supports this job supports this job. The job at the top goes away. By the top, I mean you, because the CEOs are going to be just fine. And then all of the support jobs either suffer or go away as well. So 14,000 is just the initial job loss. But wait a minute. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. There's going to be some freaking jobs, right? No. And to make things a little bit worse, the tariffs, which I believe in the idea of tariffs if they're done surgically. You cannot go at them with a, I'm thinking of a large cutting tool, like a samurai sword, you know, or like a jackhammer. You can't. They have to be surgical. You have to really think about what you're doing. And Trump just goes, nope, 10 on this, 25 on that, done. And it raised the cost of steel for GM about $1 billion on the low end, $1 billion freaking. And so they get to cite that as well. And they said they're moving away from the gasoline car market. They're moving into the electric car market, you know, electric and self-driving cars. That's what they're going to get into. So they canceled six models that they produce right now. And if they're getting into the electric car market, they've already started going backwards, because one of the cars that they canceled, the Fusion and a bunch of others, one of the things that they've canceled is the Volt. They're going to stop making the Volt. They call it a restructuring plan, and I don't really know what that is. And I just have to ask, how many people at GM voted for one Donald Trump? You're welcome. The only potential good news that comes out of this is, so Trump won Ohio and Michigan, right? He won a good chunk of the Midwest. And some of these factories are in Ohio and Michigan. And they're gonna remember this. They're going to remember this if he actually is able to make it to 2020 and decides to run again. And so this will likely cost him those states. He didn't win Michigan by much anyway, and who knows how much the Russians had to do with that. But it looks like the blame, because he went to those places and he said, hey, we are going to save your jobs. Don't worry about it. The jobs are going to, we're going to save your jobs.
I was looking at some of those big, once incredible job producing factories, and my wife, Melania, said, what happened? I said, those jobs have left Ohio. They're all coming back. They're all coming back. Coming back. Don't move. Don't sell your house. Don't sell your house. We're going to get those values up. We're going to get those jobs coming back, and we're going to fill up those factories or rip them down and build brand new ones.
He said, don't move. Don't sell your house. And now, well, maybe people could sell their house, but who the hell are they going to sell it to? At least one of these towns might actually not exist anymore because of this. And they could move, but maybe some of them are in their 40s or 50s. And there's discrimination in the market. People want young, healthy workers for any number of reasons. One, you're more likely to be able to do more jobs than, say, somebody who's thrown their back out. Sorry, older folks. It just happens. Getting old tends to suck sometimes. And you might raise their health insurance if you go to work for them. And you're, say, 40 or 50 years old, and you might need a little bit more health care than, say, the average person. And I say this as a 40-year-old who uses damn near no health care, but I know who I am, and I know what could happen to me. I know at any time, and that's why I stayed at one of my freaking jobs for health care. This is the dumbest thing I will probably say all day, just stay there for the health care, because that's what I have to do, because that's the way it's set up. Could you imagine, I've said it before, and it bears repeating again, I know I've only got, you know, 25 more episodes of this show before I hang it up. I've said it before, but I don't say it enough. Just imagine a world where you get your health, say the same way the Canadians do, and the same way the Northern Europeans do, you know, that you pay this small tax every month. It's like 50, 100, 150 bucks a month. And then that's it. That's the whole thing. Right? And then everything is covered. Cancer covered, surgeries covered, medicine covered, glasses covered, teeth covered, 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 everything covered. But how do we do it now? Every single thing you buy, from the water that comes out of your tap, the car you drive, the restaurant you go to, the furniture store you go to, the home you buy, every single thing you buy has healthcare written into it. The grocery store, they have to offer full-time employees health insurance. The cost of that health insurance, that comes out of your pocket. Yeah, I understand you're paying for your own health insurance, but you're going to help pay for theirs too. And it's going to be written into the cost of your food, your car. I think GM said about $2,000 of every car is just health care. What's the sticker price of that car you're going to buy? $22,000? Uh-huh. That last $2,000, that's just for health care. How about your home? Let's assume we're working with the same kind of numbers and it's 20%. You got a $200,000 home, $40,000 of that goes to healthcare. What about your insurance? I mean, car insurance. Aha, that's all healthcare. If a car gets destroyed and it's, say, like, let's just say worst case scenario, it's a Benz. It's like $50,000. But most people drive cars that are in about the $25,000 to $30,000 range. So the most you're on the hook for, if it's just the car, it's $25,000 to $30,000. But if you look at your car insurance, that's not what you're on the hook for, is it? Oh, no. You're on the hook for medical bills. And if it's bad enough, those medical bills could be in the millions. And so they say, that's fine. We'll sell you more coverage. So your car insurance, it's mostly medical. Your home insurance, hey, somebody comes over to your house, falls down the stairs, that medical's on you. They could sue you. So it's written into that. Wow. It's written into everything. You bought a guitar. I bet you the people that work at that factory work full time. They get offered health insurance. Part of the cost of that guitar is health care. Every single thing. The water out of your cap. The people that work at the plant. You know, the water treatment plant. Yeah, they're getting health insurance. Guess who's paying for that? You are. Melvin, I pay so much for my own damn health insurance already. Why do I got to pay for theirs too? Because this is what people decided that they wanted. When they thought it would be a good idea to put everything into private hands, it's opting. It's actually opting to pay more for everything. Everything. Now imagine we don't have your healthcare tied to your employer anymore. I get to quit my dumpy ass full-time job and I get to just run my business and I get to pay a little bit out of pocket every month to make sure that my healthcare is covered. That job opens up for some other schmuck. He gets in there. He now has that job because I have created a job on my own. Your health insurance is wiped out. Or you pay the $150 a month, or it comes out of your paycheck, or however we decide to pay that fee. Your car insurance goes through the floor because never, never are you going to cause an accident that is going to cause $1 million in damage unless you get into like a pileup or something, which is so rare. Your food, you no longer have to pay for somebody's medical insurance when you go to the grocery store. Your car, you no longer have to pay for somebody's medical insurance when you go to the grocery store. Your house, you no longer have to pay for somebody's medical insurance when you see where I'm going with this. Why do we do things in the worst way possible? If we had a single payer system, like a Medicare system, and everybody got their insurance from the same place, and everybody was under the same umbrella, and it just cut those costs. Just think about how much cheaper everything would be. We've bought into the system that we have because we have the belief that a company works for the workers or the people that buy its products. That's the idea that we have, that they're, or that they have a loyalty to the country that they belong to, or the city that they belong to. Stephanie Ruhle. I want to introduce to you Stephanie Ruhle. She is, her background is in business. She is on MSNBC a lot. Sometimes I hate Stephanie Ruhle because I think she's wrong. Sometimes I hate Stephanie Ruhle because she's effing right. And after the GM layoffs were announced, she gave about a 2-minute screed. I'm going to give it to you right now. And I hated to hear it, but old girlfriend was right.
This is a hate the game, not the player. Mary Barra, who is the CEO of General Motors, her job is to optimize the performance of the company, is to get people to buy GM cars, and is to perform for her shareholders. Now, I'm not opining on whether she's doing a good job at any of those things, but that's what she is employed to do. When you go to buy a GM car, you are not saying, how are the factory workers in Detroit being treated? Now, the problem here is the president promised those people, don't don't sell your house, we're going to be opening plants again. The president is not in a position to do that. And it was free market Republicans who went after people like Elizabeth Warren and Obama, who called bankers fat cats, who railed against how much bankers were paid after they were bailed out during the financial crisis. So if the president and Larry Kudlow are free markets enthusiasts and capitalists, they have to realize, get out of the game. Now, you could say capitalism is not working. 14,000 people are going to have no job. They might not be able to sell their homes. The CEO of that company, she's going to get paid a ton of money. Even if she loses her job, she'll get a huge pay package. The disparity between CEO pay and worker pay is huge. That factory in Detroit, when they built it in 1980, they used eminent domain, the local government, to wipe out homes, churches, and schools because they wanted to incentivize GM to come. Now, 40 years later, GM has no obligation to stay there. If you want to change those rules and now create moral capitalism, I invite you to do that. But as the game stands now, there is no obligation.
Amazon tried doing that this year. They had all these people bid for HQ2, hundreds of cities. Give us this, give us that, give us this. We don't have a problem with welfare. Whenever it's the millionaires and billionaires, we only have a problem with welfare when it helps regular people. And then after they get asked for all those freebies, all those goodies from all those cities, then they moved where we all knew they were going to move. New York and DC. Oh my, my, my. I want to explore the idea of moral capitalism. Yeah, it doesn't exist right now. But I think we're done with the way things are done. And it's time to explore this idea.
Inequality is concerned, it's been growing quite rapidly worldwide. Every year, Oxfam, leading development agency, publishes a detailed, extensive report of the state of poverty and inequality in the world. In the year 2014, they found that about 90 individuals literally had half of total world wealth, which is an extraordinary degree of inequality. In the year 2015, their latest publication, which just appeared, the number has been reduced from 90 to 62. 62 individuals hold half the world's wealth.
And that number has only increased. That number is now, in this year, it's now 42. Well, it was 42 at the end of 2017. They count it every year. 42 individuals have more money. And that number gets smaller and smaller every year. We're not better off. We're not making more money. You and I aren't able to buy more things. You and I aren't able to live a little bit better because these guys got a little bit richer. I refer to it as hoarding money. In the past, I've heard the phrase morbid wealth, a morbid level of wealth, and that's exactly what they have. And what we get in return for that, for the fact that we just keep giving these guys more and more money, I have to say at some point, that number can't get any smaller. It's not going to get down to zero, you know, with zero, you know, people having, because these guys have all the damn money. But I think eventually it'll get down to five people have more money than, say, all the rest of the world. It's like five people. Who would those five people be? Obviously, Charles and David Koch are going to be right there at the top, you know. And then the other one is probably going to be, oh, I don't know, Jeff Bezos, you know. I, like everyone else, you know, I buy things from Amazon too. But the thing about Bezos is he doesn't just want, and I remember reading this in The Nation or Atlantic, I can't remember which one. He doesn't just want to be a part of the market. You know, see, the way it works is they say, well, Verizon has 47% of the phone market or whatever. I'm just throwing out raw numbers. These aren't quotes. And then AT&T has 25%. They call it market share. You know, say Bear has, you know, 13% of the paint market and such and such has, X, you know, all this market share, right? How much share do you have of any particular market? And they say, Jeff Bezos, how much share do you want of, say, the home, you know, the home goods market? Or you bought Whole Foods. So how much of the food market, the grocery market, do you want? The thing with Bezos is he doesn't say, I want this much of that market and this much of that market and that much of that market. Jeff Bezos will say, not explicitly like I'm about to, but he will. He doesn't want this much of that market and this much of that market. He wants to be the market, the only place to go. You want food? You're going to have to buy it from something that Bezos owns. You want to read a newspaper? Fine. You're going to have to read one of Bezos' newspapers. You know, wow, you need drums. You're going to have to buy drums from one of Bezos, the people Bezos has, you know, owns. He doesn't just want to be a part of it. He wants the whole damn market. And so who would the other two gajillionaires be? I would love to hear what you think, tfycpo@gmail.com. And what we get in exchange for giving these guys all this money is absolutely nothing. Well, it's not nothing. We get crumbling schools, crumbling roads. We get endless war. We get lots and lots of debt, credit card, housing, medical. Otherwise, speaking of Bezos, Bezos wants to start something called, and this hasn't been highly publicized yet. This is one of his investors is who helped him start Amazon is speculating pretty good about this. He wants what he would call Prime Health. So with Amazon, everything is Prime. Prime movies, Prime music, Amazon Prime itself, which is the overarching thing where you join the Amazon market and you get special rates and free shipping, 2-day shipping and all this other stuff. Bezos would like to have Prime Health. So he wants the healthcare market too. And so what we get in exchange for all of this, for giving these people more money than they'll ever spend in a lifetime, right? These policies that don't make any of us any better, we get starving children.
And there are many very ugly consequences to this. To take one example from the Oxfam report, they point out that 5 million children are dying of starvation every year. That means about 500 or so while we're meeting, 500 children starving while we're talking. And they could very easily be saved. The resources are certainly there to save them. But policy is designed so that it goes to enriching the super rich and the powerful, not to saving millions of children from starvation.
There's a saying, we have enough to fill everyone's need, but not everyone's greed. And so the billionaires have gotten in and they've taken advantage of us again. We went ahead and fell for it again. Lucy yanked the football away from us again. Maybe we've learned this time. And now that the billionaires have come in and they've made lots and lots of more money, we're heading towards another pretty significant economic slowdown. And I began talking about this back in, if I'm not mistaken, 2015. I might have mentioned it in 2014. I definitely talked about it in 2015 because, man, I thought the economy was just going to go upside down during the presidential year, which made me nervous because I go, man, then the Democrat might not win. Guess what? The Democrat didn't win, but it wasn't because of the economy. Well, we're not going to get into that. So much of that's been litigated and is being litigated right now. So we'll get into that, obviously, once we get a little bit more information about it. And so the headline, Goldman Sachs believes the U.S. economy will slow to a crawl in the next year. We have seen growth as high as 3.5%, but they see it ticking down to 2.2, 1.8. And 1.6 in the coming year. And the way it goes with these guys is they make money when the market goes up and they make market money when it goes down. You'll probably lose your job. You'll probably lose your house. And then you will lose your mind. but you're not the point. See, capitalism doesn't exist for you. And I understand it. I understand economics. Capitalism makes sense because you make money with your money. And that's fine. You should be able to do that. You don't care who you hurt. See, when GM decided to cut all those jobs, their stock went up. Yeah, up. Whole stock market went up that day. But wait a minute. They're screwing over 16, well, right on the front end, like 14, 16,000 workers are going to lose their damn jobs. Right on the front end. Why did the market go up? It's because the stock market is not a reflection of America. Stock market is a reflection of the people who have money in the stock market. You say, hey, Melvin, I got money in the stock market. I got me a 401k, Melvin. I got me a Roth IRA. I got money in the stock market. Yeah, I do too. And this year, all of the gains that were made in the market have now been erased. I logged in to my brokerage account the other day, and I saw that there was money gone. About $1,500, $2,000, something like that, just gone. And they tell you right up front that this account may lose value. And this, the definition of investing, you invest for the long term. Investing isn't high frequency, jump in and out, you know. You invest for the long term. I know there's going to be ups, I know there's going to be downs, but man, it is startling to log into that account. See, if I took any money out of that account, I would have to pay about a 40% penalty. But these D-bags on Wall Street can start crashing the economy and money comes out of that account. And nobody pays for that, except for me, because the money's not there anymore. I think if you're in this audience, there's a pretty solid chance that you agree with me. And if you're in this audience and you don't agree with me, honestly, welcome. You know, I'm super glad you're here. Super glad you're listening to the other side. Wish more people would do that. For those of us that agree, like I do, with so many of the things that I say right now, there is a whole host of people that do not believe what we believe, do not think what we think that really the answer is just give the billionaires more money and that will make everything better. Oh, well, the last 10 times we gave all the billionaires a bunch of money didn't make things better. But you know what? You know what? As the old saying goes, the 11th time the charm. That is how it goes, right? I don't know. I don't pay a lot of attention. So Cindy Hyde-Smith and Mike Espy in Mississippi, there was a runoff in Mississippi, and Democrats don't win in that state. They just never have. And something happened. Cindy Hyde-Smith, and I played the clip on the program, she said something super duper racist about a public hanging. And then we found out that she went to a segregationist high school, which is one of the high schools that were put up so that white kids didn't have to go to school with the black kids after desegregation. Now, the sins of the parent are not the sins of the child, but Cindy Hyde-Smith then put her own kids into these segregationist academies, and she did all this super-duper racist stuff. And people went, man, maybe a Democrat can win in that state. Maybe Mike Espy has a chance. It was nice. It's a nice fantasy. I honestly believed it. But then when you talk to the voters, they tend to say things like, well, I don't believe in what he believes in. I believe in what she believes in, and she's going to be good for my state. You know, it's Mississippi. And in Mississippi, we only vote for Republicans. And we only vote for Republicans because, let's just face it, Republicans just make everything better for us. We voted Republican for a long time, and we will continue to vote for Republicans no matter what. This is what you're looking at is the effect of good marketing. Because things are not great for people in Mississippi, but they don't know because they've been fed this bill of goods. And see, people don't, for some folks, they don't believe reality. They believe what they're told to believe. And with the media that folks in Mississippi consume, they believe that they're the best, despite the fact that they are 50th in healthcare. DFL, dead effing last. 50th, 46th in education, 48th in the economy, 49th in opportunity, 45th in crime and corrections, dead effing last on everything. Do you know that it wasn't until 2013. See, let me read here, quoting here from U.S. News and World Report. The 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery, was ratified after three-fourths of the state passed it in 1865 after the close of the war. While four others eventually passed the amendment, Mississippi did not symbolically and officially adopt the amendment until 1995. But oh no, 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 it gets worse. Then did not officially notify Washington of the vote until 2013, 5 years ago. Why did they vote for Cindy Hyde Smith over Mike Espy, despite the fact that the consistent voting for Republicans has not made their life any better? You can't tell me it's anything other than ignorance and pure racism.
Well, obviously it was very offensive. However, I think it's totally irrelevant. I mean, it was so long ago. And I do believe that most men will talk about women in ways that they would never talk about publicly. And of course, if they would have known that they were being recorded, there's no doubt in my mind the conversation would have been totally different. Nobody is perfect. Here's the issues. Last night in that debate, they defined their issues. They lined the marks in the sand. Number one, Roe v. Wade. Okay, Hillary Clinton doesn't care about murdering babies, dismembering abortions. That's okay with her.
So that was a Trump supporter in 2016 mentioning exactly why she votes for Republicans and why she's going to continue voting for Republicans because of dismembering abortions. See, this is the kind of crap that gets sold to these people. And they go ahead and continue to vote against their economic interests despite the fact that this happens, that this kind of thing happens to them, that they end up DFL on everything. They still continue to vote the same way. Well, this is, as the old saying goes, this is the way we've always done it, and this is the way we're going to continue to do it. You say, well, Melvin, if those states are really so bad, if those states are really bad off, if they really have it that terrible and somehow don't realize it, you would think by now that those states would collapse. Oh, yes, yes, that is true. That is true. That is if those states did not depend on other states, those states would have collapsed by now. They would have been known as failed states or failed economies. But they don't seem to fail. They just seem to keep hobbling along. And how does that happen? The headline, this from AP, an AP fact check from December of last year. Blue high tax states fund the red low tax states. Is this true? Fact. Connecticut residents pay an average of $15,643 per person in federal taxes in 2015, according to a report by the Rockefeller Institute for Government. Massachusetts paid $13,582 per person. New Jersey paid $13,137, and New York paid almost $13,000. California residents paid an average of $10,510. At the other end, Mississippi residents paid $5,740 per person, much lower taxes. West Virginia paid $6,349 and Kentucky paid $6,626 and South Carolina paid $6,665. I just wanted to read out $6,666. So low tax red states fare better when you take into account federal spending. Because here's the way it goes. Mississippi received $2.13 for every dollar that they sent to Washington in 2015. They received back more than double of what they sent to D.C., according to the Rockefeller study. West Virginia received $2.07 for every dollar they sent to Washington. Kentucky got $1.90, and South Carolina got $1.71 for every dollar they sent to D.C. See, if these states really got to secede, like they piss and moan about all the time, if they really got to secede, they would absolutely collapse. Meanwhile, New Jersey received 74 cents for every dollar they sent. New York got 81 cents for every dollar they sent. And Connecticut and Massachusetts got 82 and 83 cents, respectively, for every dollar they sent. See, blue states get back less. We in the blue states, and I live in one high tax state and work in another high tax state. We're doing fine, by the way. And we fund what you yokels are doing down in Mississippi and in Georgia and South Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky. We are funding the crap that you guys like to do. And I'm sorry you're not better off. You're just not picking good representation. California fared quite a bit better than some of these others. 96 cents for every dollar that they sent to Washington, but they are still losing money. And so that's what props up these red states. Now, these red states, you're more likely to die from an on-the-job accident. You're less likely to hold on to a job. You're less likely to get paid a fair wage for that job. You're more likely to die in the hospital while delivering a baby. But these folks say we can't vote for a Democrat because they believe in dismembering abortions, whatever the piss that means. I say we can't. Morally, we just can't. I heard one local guy say, I can't vote for the, in good conscience, I cannot vote for the Democrat. Really? In good conscience, you cannot vote for the Democrat. So you voted for Donald Trump. You voted for Donald Trump. Oh, good. You voted for Donald Trump. Right. That's right. In good conscience, of course. Donald Trump, the guy that paid off a porn star because he decided to go bang it out with her while his wife was at home with their new baby. That guy.
Did you know about the payments?
Later on, I knew. Later on. But you have to understand, Angela, what he did, and they weren't taken out of campaign finance. That's a big thing. That's a much bigger thing. Did they come out of the campaign? They didn't come out of the campaign. They came from me, and I tweeted about it. You know, I don't know if you know, but I tweeted about the payments. But they didn't come out of campaign. In fact, my first question when I heard about it was, did they come out of the campaign? Because that could be a little dicey. And they didn't come out of the campaign, and that's big. But they weren't, that's not a, it's not even a campaign violation. If you look at President Obama, he had a massive campaign violation, but he had a different attorney general, and they viewed it a lot different.
And so they simply cannot vote for Democrats because, my God, morally and ethically, I cannot get behind the, so the headline from the New York Times by Nicholas Kristof, the blue states practice the family values the red states preach, as we watch Roy Moore thumping his Bible to defend himself from the accusations of child molestation. Let me toss out a verbal hand grenade. To some degree, liberals practice the values that conservatives like to preach. According to the Youth Risk Behavior Survey of 32 states, those with the highest percentage of high school students who say they've had sex are Mississippi, Delaware, West Virginia, Alabama, and Arkansas, all but Delaware voted Republican in the last presidential election. Meanwhile, the five states with the lowest proportion of high school students who have had sex were New York, California, Maryland, Nebraska, Connecticut. All but Nebraska voted Democratic. When evangelical kids have sex, they're less likely to use birth control. And that may be the reason, along with lower abortion rates, that red states have high teen birth rates. 9 of the 10 states with the highest teen birth rates voted Republican in 2016, and 9 of the 10 states with the lowest teen birth rates voted Democratic. Red regions of the country have higher teen pregnancy rates, more shotgun weddings, and lower average ages at marriage and first birth. This according to Naomi Kahn and June Carbone from their 2010 book, Red Families versus Blue Families. The conservative hostility towards premarital sex also sometimes leads to early weddings, even to child marriages, which I can't believe in 2018 we still have to fight. The red versus blue is an easy one. So it's an argument we've been having for a long time. And by the way, voting for a Republican is not automatically bad, and voting for a Democrat is not automatically good. The way we tend to judge most things are trend lines. If we say that a couple has a good marriage, it's not because everything is perfect all the time. It's because things are super duper great most of the time. Or the couple is at the very least happy. If we say that this is a great car right here, we don't say it's a great car because it never ever breaks down or runs out of gasoline. It runs out of gasoline and every so often it breaks down. But when you consider all the other cars, yeah, this car does a lot better. And so to the red states, I would just like to say, if you really have a problem with immorality, you might want to look at your own party. Hell, most of the Republicans that were impeaching Clinton were doing so at the same time that they were cheating on their own spouses. And you've not gotten anything out of voting Republican. It's not done anything for you. Now, I don't always win when I vote Democratic, but at least I know what I'm getting into. And we need to kill confirmation bias. We need to stop simply seeking out only the information we want to hear, living inside only the bubbles that we want to hear. And if you get your news from your Facebook feed, from your Twitter feed, then that is most likely what you are getting. Likely only things that, mostly things that you want to hear. And that's it. And you're not getting all of the information. Now, is voting for all Democrats a magic bullet? Gosh dang it, no. But I can promise you that if you leave power in the hands of the Republicans and they continue to not have to be accountable for anything, hell, the stuff that Trump has done, Nixon did half of it and he was facing impeachment. But we live in such an environment now that we've got our own little tribes. And you know, this is the hill we're going to die on. Tax cuts for millionaires. Bam. Yes, yes. This is the Civil War. We're going to die for slavery. Even though we ourselves cannot afford to own a slave, we're going to die for slavery. This is the hill that we're going to die on. And why do we do that? We do that because we believe what we're allowed to believe. So the economic downturn, it's coming. It's on its way. And it's going to affect us all. And the people that are causing that significant economic downturn aren't going to have to pay any price for doing so. You might lose your home, you might lose your job, but they are going to get a little bit richer from it. It'll go on for a few years. Things will start to get better. We'll start to forget that it ever happened. And we'll continue to give all of our money to Goldman Sachs. We'll continue to give all of our money to GM. We'll continue to give all of our money to Jeff Bezos because we just forgot that last time we gave them all those billions of dollars, it didn't do us any good. We're not stupid. We've got brains. We can think about this stuff. We have the ability to learn. What we lack is the will to learn. I tell you this not to be preachy, and I'm definitely not right about everything, but from what I've observed in my short time on this planet, it is that when you bash your hand with a hammer and it effing hurts, you know what? Not going to do that again because there's nothing so important that I'm going to keep hitting myself in the hand with a freaking hammer. Maybe next time I'm going to move my hand. You know what? Maybe to drive this nail in doesn't even require a hammer because you know what? It's a teeny tiny nail and I've got a shoe right here. We learn and we don't keep doing the same things over and over again. We had a good year in 2018, especially with respect to the politics. I'm not sure what happened in your life personally, but I am not of the mind that we are, it's easy sailing now. Everything's going to be all right. I mean, the president's going to be removed from office and everything's just going to be peachy keen. I'm not of that mind. You have to continue to stay engaged. You have to continue to pay attention because we lost it the first time. And we could lose it all again. Start preparing for the economic downturn now. Start watching the VIX, the volatility index. You know, it's not going to tell you everything, but it's going to tell you a pretty good, more than the stock market will, pretty good about where the economy is at and where the economy is going. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. If you want to reach us, questions, comments, hate mail, just send an email to tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard not only to inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our base. Feel free to reach out to us. Thank you for listening. We're the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. A special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.